Well, I love Christmas music on Christmas Eve and on Christmas Day. And then away it goes until another year. In a moment, Karen Anderson joins us. He's back with us. The amazing afterlife of animals. Many of us who have owned pets and just love them like our own kids will really understand what we're going to talk about next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you this Christmas night. It's getting into the morning, the wee hours. It's Christmas past in many time zones now. Karen Anderson back with us, a professional animal communicator, psychic medium from the Eastern Washington area. She discovered that she had psychic abilities and could talk to the animals at a very young age. Karen surrounded herself with many beloved animals over the years, learned how to understand their thoughts and feelings. Now, as her career path took her into the Rocky Mountains of Colorado, Karen realized that her psychic skills enabled her to read the energy of suspects and criminals that she dealt with while she was a deputy sheriff in Bailey, Colorado. A couple of her latest works include The Amazing Afterlife of Animals and, of course, Hear All the Creatures. Karen, Merry Christmas to you. How was your day?
Hi, George. Merry Christmas to you. It's pretty good so far. Pretty good. Thanks for asking.
Well, so far it's going to get even better by the time this interview's on and off tonight.
I hope so. I'm ready.
So tell me a little bit about your work as a deputy sheriff. That's amazing.
Yeah, well, that's where it all started to come back to me. Of course, I could understand the animals when I was a little kid, and I would have silly little conversations with them. But it wasn't until I was actually a deputy that I had to start to rely on my intuitive abilities. And if you know any cops out there, most of the good cops will have a natural gut instinct about things, and they call it gut instinct. They won't call it their intuition, but it's pretty much the same thing. And I had to rely on my gut instincts, my intuition, because I worked in a mountain district, and sometimes the nearest backup car was half an hour, 45 minutes away. So I had to work smarter, and I had to really pay attention to the energy of the suspects on crime scenes.
Did you have to see them or you felt them?
No, I started to read body language and the energy, and you start watching people and you watch their eyes and their movements, and you begin to read the energy. And for instance, if you've ever walked into a room after two people have been arguing, even if they're not arguing anymore, you know, the energy is so thick in that room you could cut it like a knife. So that's the kind of energy that I'm talking about. I would start to read the energy that was going on a crime scene, and information started to come through to me. And that's when I discovered that animals could share information as to what actually happened before I got there.
That is dramatic all by itself. Well, we're going to talk about a lot of things that deal with the amazing afterlife of animals, Karen, because truly many of us who have owned pets over the years have this incredible attachment with them. They become family, don't they?
They do, and they are. And I think some of us have felt a greater loss when we have lost a pet than even when we have some of our human loved ones. We are so closely connected to our pets. I know I am. I'm sure you are too, George.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Now, tell us how this transition occurred for you from being the deputy sheriff, you know, feeling the suspects and the criminals and their energy, then evolving into the animal world.
Well, it was kind of a snowball type of situation that happened. When I would arrive on the scene of a crime, for instance, a domestic violence call, one particular story that stands out for me, I was interviewing the victim, and she had been abused by her live-in boyfriend, and he had taken off on foot and was gone. There were two other deputies looking for him at the time, but I was back with the victim, and this little kitty came walking through the front yard where we were standing and walked over to a storage shed that was right next to the house. And I happened to look over at the cat, and I'm a cat lover, I'm an animal lover, so of course I'm going to notice a cat on the scene. And the cat walked over to the storage shed, looked right at me, looked right at the shed, and I heard the words inside. I heard it in my head. And I thought, well, how can that be? That shed's already been checked. Is that cat telling me that the suspect is in that shed? So I went over to the shed, and with my weapon drawn, I ordered the suspect to come out with their hands up, and sure enough, he was in there.
Wow.
So that's when it all started to snowball, and I did what you did. I went, wow, oh my gosh. And I started to rely more and more on what the animals could tell me, because I found that they're way more honest than the human eyewitnesses. They tell me exactly what's going on, and they don't try to cover things up. You know, if you interview humans, they try to backtrack and cover things up. And so the animals were always very forthcoming with their information, and they would tell me openly and honestly what was going on or what happened. Within their ability, of course. It wasn't like talking to a human. You know, I'd get images, they'd flash images to me, or I'd hear words, or even on one particular call that I went on, the female victim made it look like her husband had abused her.
Hmm.
And she called 911. Well, it was actually the opposite way. She had attacked the husband.
Jeez.
Well, she did, yes, but she put she cut herself and she put marks on her arm to make it look like he hit her and that he hurt her. And her story wasn't adding up, and they had a couple of animals on the scene there at the house, and so I just checked in with them. I asked them what happened, and they showed me that she was the aggressor, not the husband, as she had portrayed it. So just putting together the facts and the information that I got from the animals, along with the statements from the victim and the so-called suspects, I was able to figure out what really happened.
You know, there are stories, and now this is not necessarily psychic, but there are stories of parrots, for example, who mimic so much that they've been able to mimic the sounds of, let's say, scuffles in a house or a murder that has occurred, and some police have actually used that, to go after the perpetrator.
Well, why not? I mean, it's possible, and parrots are great at mimicking, and I know which story you're talking about because I heard about that too, where the bird kept saying what happened and kept mentioning, describing the scene that it saw. And
made the sounds of the scuffling that was going on.
Yes. I heard about that story. And see, that just fascinates me. That's just incredible. But it's an untapped source of information. And they give the information willingly if you're able to understand them like I can and gather that information. And why not? Some information is better than zero information, especially when you're a police officer. If you've got nothing, you know, you're going to look for whatever possible source of information you can to solve one of your cases.
You know, there's no question that people who have had animals and get attached to them as pets, and I'm talking primarily pets at home, of course, that, you know when you look in the eyes of your dog or cat, and I've been a dog owner all my life, Karen, so not we've had one cat over the years, but so I speak primarily as someone who has owned dogs, Labradors primarily, a couple Huskies too, but that you look at them, you know they can sense you, and they look at you. Sometimes the way they look at you and tilt their head, they know what's going on, don't they?
Oh, yes, they do, and it's amazing how much information they know about us. Now, on a big scale, it's hard for them to take in big concepts, but overall they can describe to me if there's stress in the household. They can describe to me if there's illness in the household. I get from the animals if there's an imbalance, even mental illnesses. They can share that with me. Now, that looking at you and that tilting of the head that you're talking about, the reason they do that is because as you are at home with them and having a thought run through your mind, it might be, oh gosh, maybe I have to feed the dogs, it's getting about dinner time, or maybe it's time to take the dogs out for a walk, or whatever it is that you're thinking, as you're thinking those things, they're playing out in your mind like a mini movie, and the animals are able to tune in to that mini movie, and they pay attention to the parts that involve them, such as food and treats and going for walks and all that fun stuff. And that's what you're seeing as they're tilting their heads and they're looking at you. That's what they're doing. They're reading your mind. Those little images that are flashing through your mind, they can pick up on. Those are energetic messages, and that's what they send me.
Now, you also, and we're going to talk a little bit about the work, The Amazing Afterlife of Animals. These are messages and signs from the pets on the other side. But we're talking right now about pets that are alive. And so tell me that feeling, that sense that you get when they try to communicate with you. How does it come into you? How do you know your vivid imagination, for example, hasn't kicked in?
Right. And, you know, that's part of the learning process is exactly that. You have to eliminate, you know, what is my imagination and what is truth or what is accurate information? And it really comes over time and practice. And I've been doing this for over 20 years now. And in that time, I have communicated with, you know, thousands and thousands of animals. And over time, I start to see patterns of how they will send information to me. And I'm able to take that information and relay it back to their human, and their human is the one that validates the information for me. I'm really just the middleman. So I'm taking the information from the animal, the energetic information, and it can be in the form of a like a mini movie, like I said, or an image. They can flash something to me. I can get a feeling, a happiness, sadness, anxiety. I can get all kinds of feelings from them. And then I turn around and relay that information to their human, and based on what the animals are sharing with me, I can translate that message, and the human will tell me, yes, that's exactly what they do, or that's what I did, or that's what I had for lunch today, or whatever the information was. It doesn't always make sense to me, but it will make sense to their human.
When you call your pet by its name, does it know the name, or how has it associated the name with whatever you're calling?
Well, they know their names. They like their nicknames better because they tell me that the nickname is, like, full of love. So you might have, like, the first name that you gave your pet, you know, whatever it was. Like, my first cat that I had as an adult, his name was Monroe, but I used to call him Mau Mau. Well, he loved the nickname Mau Mau because when I said it with so much love. So they like that because it comes from a place of love. So it's not so much the name, but it's everything that goes behind it, the feelings, the emotions. That's what they're cueing into. And also the tone, how you say it. They're very cued into the tone of voice.
When you were working cases as a deputy sheriff with animals involved, I mean, what did your colleagues think?
I didn't tell them.
Aha! Uh-huh. I knew it.
You know, it was something I kept under wraps, and I was trying to figure it out myself at the time, and I was kind of boggled by the whole thing, like, how can this be happening, and oh my gosh, is this really, am I getting this information? And it kept turning out to be accurate, and you know, I never let on to anybody. In fact, if they're listening tonight, they're sitting there going, well, she never told me. Of course not. I didn't tell you. Like, that would have gone over well. You know, cops need evidence. We need proof. You know, if it doesn't hold up in court, you don't have a case. So it's not necessarily something that you're going to bring to your colleagues and go, hey, guys, guess what? The resident cat just told me that the bad guy's hiding out in the shed. You know, that wouldn't have gone over very well. So, no, I didn't tell them.
And I wonder how many of them would have believed you or
Zero.
Thought there was something wrong with you or something.
All of them would have thought that for sure. They believe me now because, you know, this is what I've been doing ever since I left the department. So,
do they still call on you for help?
I actually work with several different law enforcement agencies working on cold cases. I work on missing persons. And I have a couple of cases that I have worked in the past. One of them is the Baby Hope case, which was out of New York.
Oh, yes.
And I worked on that one, and I have actually a local case that I'm working on right now of a missing person. And right here in the town where I live, just coincidence. And so I work with different law enforcement agencies to help bring closure to the victims and their families. And this one particular case I'm working on right now, the gentleman disappeared on a Friday after work, and the only thing that they found when they went to his house to go look for him were his two dogs. So right there is my in. So I was able to connect with the dogs and gather information from them. The only problem is that the dogs didn't see where he went. They don't know where they took him.
They just know something happened in the house,
exactly.
Out he went.
Exactly. So I had limited, I could only get, you know, you can only get so much information, whatever they were able to see.
Can they describe what the suspects look like and things like that?
Yes, they can tell me how many people were there. They can tell me male or female. They can give me descriptions. They can tell me what they were wearing.
My gosh.
But some of these are flashes and images. So I'm able to...
Do they get scared?
Oh, yeah.
They do.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I get all that information. I gather all that information, and I provide it to law enforcement or family members or both. Sometimes law enforcement doesn't work with me. Sometimes they think I'm crazy because I'm psychic. And other ones are open to it because, like I said, some information is better than zero information when you've got nothing. So the way I look at it is if I can help the victims, if I can help their families bring closure, maybe we don't bring the suspect to justice, but I can at least let the family know what happened to their loved one.
Well, Karen, do the animals ever mislead you on purpose? Has that ever happened?
Only cats.
Cats will do this? Why? Why would they lie to you?
Well, because I get asked all the time which animals are the smartest animals, and you know everybody says, whales and dolphins. And while that may be true, whales and dolphins are very intelligent, chimpanzees and, cats, they make a fool out of me every time. Let's just say, for instance, take a litter box issue. If you have a multi-cat household and my job is to go in and figure out, maybe who's not using the litter box, they'll blame each other. They'll literally say, oh, he did it. Over there, he did it.
Are they afraid of retribution or something?
They're just too smart. Some of them are too smart for their own good. No, they're not afraid. I wouldn't say that they're afraid. I think they just are very good at manipulating their environment and us. I have cats. To get what they want. So that's just another opportunity for them to manipulate. And sometimes they're just messing with me. Sometimes they're jokesters, and sometimes they do mess with me, but yeah.
Then how do you know what's the truth and what is not?
I rely on their human. I work very closely with my clients. So the human who belongs to that animal, I work very closely with them. So I'm relaying this information back and forth to the human, and their human is validating, confirming that information for me.
What does the human call you for? What do they generally ask?
Oh, gosh. I get asked everything from health issues, if there's something going on with their pet, and they have this feeling that there's something wrong, but the vets are telling them, no, they're fine, and test results are fine. I can ask the animals where they're feeling pain or discomfort. I can sometimes see on an energetic level or a cellular level where changes are taking place. For instance, if there's, let's say, a kidney issue or a liver function, even something within the glands like the thyroid or the pancreas, I can pick up on little snippets of information.
Well, we've always wondered if they could at least tell a vet what's wrong with themselves, we could get them cured a little quicker. Let's talk about your latest work, The Amazing Afterlife of Animals, when we come back. And welcome back to Coast, Karen Anderson with us. Karen, the book, The Amazing Afterlife of Animals. Tell us about this.
Well, you know, in all the years that I've been communicating with animals and talking to animals that are alive and well and then those that have passed on, I found that the greatest amount of healing for the humans came from the messages from the animals who had passed on. So many of us will carry grief with us, sometimes for decades. Sometimes we carry it our whole lives. If there's a pet that we lost and we never resolve the grief from however that pet died, or if we feel guilty about maybe not doing a surgery or not having the money to spend to get them better, and having a session with that pet and delivering the messages to their humans, I realized how much healing took place during those sessions. And that's what prompted me to write this book, is that so many of us, just from one little message from our pets, that's all we need, is that one little message to know that they're alive and well on the other side and still connected with us, that they're still around us, and they're still watching what's going on and a part of our lives. And that's what the book is all about. It has actual stories and messages from the animals in the afterlife, how to work through your grief. Unresolved grief can really be devastating over many, many years and cause us to alter our lives and not even allow another pet into our life. And the book helps you learn how to work through your grief and to feel better about yourself and what ultimately happened with your pet.
Karen, when a person passes on, and let's say their pet then passes on or maybe has passed on before the person died, do they interconnect on the other side?
Yeah, I will often have, when I connect with a deceased animal, I will often have that person's other loved ones come through in the session. So let's say if I'm connecting with your deceased dog, there's a very good chance that I will connect with your departed human loved ones as well. So grandparents, mothers, fathers, sisters, brothers, anybody who has passed, they can come through as well. The process that I go through, it's a meditative process. And once I make the connection with your departed pet, it's like opening the door to your other loved ones on the other side. And they can come through if they want to, and they usually do. They're usually together in what I call your family soul group. And they are with each other in spirit, if you will. And I see this quite a bit, where the departed pets will say, let them know that I'm here with their grandmother, or let them know that I'm here with their father or their mother or whoever it is, and I'll start getting messages from the departed humans too. So you never know who's going to show up during a session.
Karen, give us a few stories, if you can, about the other side and pets.
Well, I think one of the biggest misconceptions that we have is that our animals are not around us or not with us. And the best stories for me, I write about in my book, The Amazing Afterlife of Animals, is I was just starting to connect with a deceased cat named Bree when she showed me a tape measure. And I thought, well, that's kind of a weird thing for her to show me, but I took note of it and I waited for her human mom to call in for the appointment. And I asked her if there was any reason why her deceased cat would show me a tape measure. And she said that just before she called me for the appointment that day, she had been measuring the size of her mattress to get the right size sheets, because you know how they always pull up on the side?
Yes.
She wanted to get the right size sheets, so she had a tape measure, and she was measuring the mattress. And while she was doing that, she looked over and saw her departed cat's bed that used to sit right there on top of the bed, is now off to the side of the bed, and she said to herself, I just wish I knew you were still with me. I just wish I knew you were still around me and a part of my life. And sure enough, that's what her cat did. She sent me the image of a tape measure so that I could tell her mom that she was right there when she was measuring that mattress.
Huh. And this image appeared where? Like in your head?
Yes. Like okay. Right now, if I ask you, George, to picture the Statue of Liberty.
Mm-hmm. There it is.
You can see her, right?
I see it.
Okay.
I see it.
Yep. How about the American flag?
Yep, I see it.
Okay, how about an apple? A red apple. Take a bite out of that apple.
With a worm in it.
Yep.
There it is.
That's how
away.
Those images flash in my mind.
Okay. All right. And is it like remote viewing?
It is. It's very, very much like remote viewing. In fact, that's some of the practice, I guess, if you will, that I did way back when I first started to learn how to do this. And going to a remote place or having a friend go to a remote place that I don't know and then trying to pick up on what they were looking at, what was around them, were they outside, inside, you know, colors, shapes, buildings, cars, whatever, that's part of the learning process because it is a skill. Just like anything else, tennis, piano, singing, the more you practice, the better you become.
We're going to take your phone calls next hour with Karen Anderson. We're not going to do readings. We're not doing pet readings, but we'll take your questions and your stories. We'd love for you to share some of your animal stories with us that may have occurred with you. I get lots of calls, Karen, from people who see paw prints of their dead animals on their bed, you know, like they're walking around.
Yes, they are. They are there. They're there walking around.
And how do they do the indentation? I mean, how can they physically manifest that?
You know, there's quantum physics involved.
And telekinesis, isn't it?
There's some, you know, I'm not a scientist, but I'm sure there's some science behind it somewhere, but they do this. They smudge the windows. They walk across our beds. I had a client of mine tell me that she found a single paw print out in the snow, no other pets, no other animals around, a single paw print one morning when she was really missing her cat, and there it was. No other prints around but this perfectly preserved paw print right there in the snow. They do this, and the more we acknowledge those signs and the more we ask for those signs, the more we'll get.
If someone has been cruel to their pet and the pet has died, is there communication or what happens then? That's a bizarre question, but it does happen.
Okay, well, first of all, I don't deal with too many people who are cruel to their animals, but
good.
I've dealt with
Not that they're going to admit it to you anyway.
Right. But I have had animals that will tell me that they suffered cruelty before they came to my client or they suffered abuse or whatever. The one thing to keep in mind is that animals don't hold grudges. That tends to be a human trait. Animals are really wanting to move forward and to let go of that and to let it be the past. And they don't hold on to those grudges. They forgive us for the things that we do. They don't even hold us responsible when we have to take their lives and euthanize them. They don't hold us responsible. They don't see it that way. So they're very forgiving, and we have a lot to learn from these guys.
What's the major message you want people to get with the Amazing Afterlife of Animals book?
That our departed animals are still around us and connected to us and a part of our lives, and they're never more than a thought away.
Do they reincarnate?
Some of them do, not all of them, but some of them do.
Into other animals or people?
Mostly, if they're a dog, they come back as a dog. If they're a cat, they come back as a cat. But there are exceptions to every rule, and I have seen cases where animals return as human and human return as animals, but they're not nearly as frequent as the one I mentioned before.
And Karen, your expertise is primarily that of domesticated animals, are they not?
That's correct. My clients contact me for their cats, their dogs, their horses, parrots. That's primarily what I work with.
And what percent are these phone calls to you for animals that are deceased as opposed to you just trying to reach the animal that's alive and trying to get into their head?
I would say it's probably 50-50, but...
Oh, really? Okay, yeah. I would have thought the afterlife would have been much higher than that.
No, it's probably 50-50. I do a lot of behavior resolution, helping people understand why their animal is behaving a certain way. So that's a very big part of what I do, getting inside their heads and helping them move forward and modify their environment so that they can reach the optimum place of harmony. I do a lot of that work. The afterlife is I think, one of the most powerful sessions I can have because of the amount of healing that comes through from sometimes what would seem like a very insignificant message, like the tape measure, for instance. Or I had another session one time where a deceased dog told me that his mom had crumpets for breakfast. Crumpets. And I thought, what in the world? I didn't even know what they were at the time. I do now because, you know, they're English and they look like English muffins and the British eat them. Anyway, the client called in and I said, did you have crumpets for breakfast?
And they drink tea with it.
Yes, exactly. And she had. A friend of hers had just returned from Great Britain and brought her crumpets. She had crumpets for breakfast that morning before the session. So her little dog was showing her that he was around while she was eating because he used to be right there at her feet when she was having breakfast and was paying attention to what she was eating. So it's amazing what they can share and how they can let us know that they're still around us and still a part of our lives.
What is the seeing spot story that you have?
Seeing spots. When I first started to learn how to communicate with animals, and I had to go to the other side. It's another realm, so you have to get into a meditative state, or at least I did in the very beginning, and it takes a lot of focus and a lot of practice. And this one particular session, I was at a convention, and the client was sitting there with me, and all of a sudden I said to her, I'm seeing spots everywhere. It looks like black and white spots. And I said, is there any reason why I would be seeing spots? And the client just kept saying, no, I can't think of anything. You know, Karen, you must be wrong. You must be wrong. I don't know anything with spots. Well, her Dalmatian had just recently passed away. And so he was over on the other side. I didn't see that it was a dog. I just saw the spots. So that was really like a big leap for me. That was like a big learning curve for me because it's not always going to present itself in a way that I might understand it. It would have been much easier if I would have just seen a Dalmatian, but instead I just saw the spots. So I had to tell her what I was seeing, and finally it clicked in her mind, oh, that was my Dalmatian.
Karen, because you communicate with the, you know, animals that have departed, what about the possibilities of you easily communicating with humans who have departed?
It's exactly the same, except humans can be less likely to answer questions. I can ask animals just about anything, and they'll share very honestly with me, or they'll be very forthcoming with the information if they know it. Human energy, they like to do all the talking. They don't always want to answer my questions.
But you do contact them.
Yes. I'm also a medium, so
yeah.
I connect with departed humans as well.
For people who want to have the ability to get in touch with their departed pets, what do they do? Is there a Who's Who booklet for that? I mean, do you include training tips or anything?
Oh, if someone wants to learn how to communicate?
Yeah.
I actually teach an online course. It's very simple. The steps are very simple to learn. And like I mentioned earlier, there's just a lot of practice. And it's called Learn the Language of the Pets You Love, an online course. It's self-paced. And I take you through it with video presentations so that you can learn the simple steps so that you can communicate with the pets you love.
What kind of meditative state do you have to be in?
Well, meditation for me was really hard because I couldn't quiet my mind down. So So it's really just a matter of focusing on what your goal is. So if your goal is to communicate with a particular departed pet, then you would get into a state where you would just be really calm and relaxed, and you don't have your cell phones or you don't have any other noises or things going on around you, and you just create a nice peaceful environment where your goal is to make the connection with that pet. Your intention is a big part of making that connection. So once you have your goal in mind, once you know who you want to connect with, you just have to literally make that, formulate a message in your mind, just even the message of love. Like right now, if you want to send a message to your beloved pet, even one that's in the room with you, they can be on the other side or right there with you, just formulate in your mind whatever love looks like to you. Or maybe it's a feeling, or maybe it's you hugging your pet, or maybe it's you kissing their face. Whatever it is, formulate that message in your mind, and then all you have to do is click and send that message like an email through space and time, and imagine it landing right on them, right on their head, right on their heart, whatever you want. Just imagine that they get their message, and then be ready for them to send you a response.
What's the biggest misconception about pets who have passed on?
I think the biggest misconception is that they hold us responsible for the way their life ended if things didn't go right.
They blame us?
That they don't blame us. That we think they blame
us. We do, yeah. A lot of people do.
Right.
And that's only natural, isn't it?
It is.
Except the person who had to put their pet down.
Right.
That's got to be awful for everybody.
It is. It's awful, and I've had to do it, and I never want to go through it again, but I have pets, and that's part of it, and that's part of our responsibility, is to help manage them and to only keep them here as long as they are happy and healthy and whole. And then when it is time to help them transition, they do entrust us with that decision.
And you get it done. Karen, we're going to take phone calls when we come back. We're not doing pet readings, but we'll take your questions and your pet stories next.